Welcome to the Food and Farming podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
From silaging to slurry spreading and bringing the cows in or out, the weather is a major driver of day-to-day life on British dairy farms. Last summer's unprecedented periods of hot weather will have a big impact on our cows, and if not managed effectively, will have led to more stress, lower milk production and higher rates of disease. As more extreme weather seems set in to be the norm, preparing for and managing heat stress in cows will become increasingly more important. I'm Tom Washbourne, and in this podcast, I'll be talking to farmer Kate Lywood and vet Claire Walker with what we can do to help prevent and manage heat stress in dairy cows. Kate, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, so I'm Kate Lywood. Currently manage 330 spring calving organic cows in West Sussex. Managing the farm at the moment with my husband Jeremy, closed herd, so in total got around 330 milkers, 85 heifers and around 97 springborn calves. Obviously being organic, we're a little bit more limited with what we can do with some of the other areas of heat stress such as fly prevention and things like that, so it's definitely becoming quite a big topic for us at the moment.
Thank you. Claire.
Hi, I'm Claire Walker. Yeah, I'm a farm animal vet based down in West Sussex. I've been working down here for the last 15 years or so, and yeah, I'm currently part of the team with Kate and Jeremy.
Kate, from a farmer's perspective, how big a problem is heat stress for you?
I'd say it's becoming, well, it is a serious problem and it's becoming an increasingly serious problem. I always use the example of, you know, 10 years ago or so when I first returned home from New Zealand and first rejoined the family farm, that heat stress wasn't really a conversation that we had. We were aware that, you know, we quite often, even being spring calving, had to buffer feed the cows through the summer. Obviously, we were conventional then as well, so we could fly treat and things like that. But to be honest, summer was summer and we never really had much of a conversation about it. Whereas now it's a really big thing that actually heat stress affects us for much longer. It's showing many more issues in the cows. And also it's year on year that we're seeing much higher levels of extremes as well. And I think that's extremes with all sorts of weather as well, that actually we go from being, say, incredibly wet and then incredibly cold, and then we're suddenly incredibly hot and incredibly dry, and there doesn't seem to be anything in the middle or any kind of gradual going from one weather pattern into another. So actually, if what we're becoming much more aware of is that if we are entering a time of heat stress, that that could happen at any time, and we need to be ready and we need to know what we're going to do about it, and we need to be proactive in order to prevent it impacting the cows for the rest of the season. And that's something that I hope we're starting to become much better at with Claire's help, and just from having a greater understanding of the actual seriousness of how it affects the cows day to day, and also for the ongoing lactation and possibly even the lactation after.
And Claire, from a vet's perspective, what sort of things do you see at the onset of heat stress?
Well, I think what's more important is what we're not seeing. I think it's the much bigger problem than we actually do see. We perceive that the time of heat stress is when it's temperatures like it has been recent days of high 20s, early 30s. But actually, we know that a cow is most comfortable between minus 15 degrees C and 25 degrees C. And so anything above that, she is in heat stress. And humidity comes to play with that as well. So if humidity is making it feel warmer than 25 on the temperature humidity index, then she is going to be suffering from heat stress. So things that we're seeing on farm with heat stress that the farmers might see directly are cows with increased respiratory rates or higher temperatures that are drinking more, standing around more. But actually more worrying is what we're not seeing, because when a cow is heat stressed, she has to then use energy to reduce her own body temperature as her body temperature goes up. So she then, her maintenance energy increases, which means it is detracted from other functions of her body, which include productivity, reproduction, her immune system, And it's all these invisible signs of heat stress that we don't see directly, but can be compromising her both welfare and production. And what's also something that's not looked at enough, I think, is this compromise of the frustration that this can cause animals. If she feels thirsty, she's conflicted. Does she lie down and rest? Does she stand and thermoregulate? This, I think, is underestimated at the negative effects that it can have on animals.
And Kate, have you seen any of that in practical terms on farm?
Yes, we have. I was looking for to try and get some sort of data actually on the effect on milk yield. And actually, I came to the conclusion while I was doing it that it was the most sort of useless of all the parameters, because like Claire's saying, it's the effect on their overall welfare. When I started looking, it was impossible because we're getting cows in calf, their yields are naturally dropping and the grass quality is also declining. So the direct impact on yield, I don't know. Where we have seen major things, and actually we've got a meeting about this with Claire tomorrow, is the management of mastitis is huge. We're seeing far more increases of mastitis, and actually mastitis that just doesn't ever then seem to want to get better. So we end up drying cows off and things like that, or them leaving the herd completely. So obviously we're limited by how many treatments we can offer a cow being organic. The biggest one for us, strangely, is actually if we have any cows within the herd that are perhaps those kind of unknown underachievers. So they've got something that perhaps is always there, but you'd never know about it until they're put under a time of extreme stress. And we did a lot of blood testing and things last year, trying to figure out exactly why we had cows that would suddenly go really like almost completely dry themselves off. They'd go off their feed, they look awful. And we'd offer them anti-inflammatories mainly and things, and they would get better. But what we are seeing is basically all those kind of subclinical signs. In a time of heat stress, you end up dealing with those sorts of animals far more. So it's exposing things possibly within the herd that we didn't even know were there. We don't know exactly what. It's almost kind of almost random animals exposing random traits that are always there, but you'd never know about. But it does show the level of stress that is being put on the cows within those times. The other biggest thing is obviously at the moment we are right in the middle of our AI. So we're right in the middle of our breeding season. And last year we actually found that we did get cows in calf, but actually it was around the cows now that we actually then started seeing losses in cows as well. So we do a PD, those cows would be PD positive, and then at the next PD she's negative, but then it's not long enough to almost get her back in calf. And strangely, that was most prevalent within the heifers. So the animals running with bulls, they were AI'd to sexed on the home farm. They then went out to River Meadows with the bulls once they'd been PD positive. And when we re-PD'd them later on in the year, there was actually 10 of 80 animals that had lost those calves and were empty. So I'd say for us, the biggest things are kind of those subclinical illnesses that are perhaps underlying, but you'd never know about. The effect that it has on conception, the number of cows you actually manage to spot bulling in those later weeks of AI, which is impacting on our fertility, and mastitis being probably our biggest bugbears with it, I suppose.
That's really quite devastating. Claire, is this something that you see outside of the organic sector, outside of the grass-based sector?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kate's farm is a very good example of the effects that it can have, because they are very well controlled with their infectious disease and other parameters on farm. So actually the losses that we're seeing here, we know that we can put down to these external forces rather than something that's not being managed within the herd, because everything is being managed. It definitely seen across the sector. There was something we can see as a bit more of a direct relation, is increase in lameness and claw horn lesion. So after the hot heat stress periods last summer, or the hottest periods last summer, we were then picking up a lot of lame cows 4 to 6 weeks later with bruising and claw horn lesions, and that's all from increased standing from being hot. That really did correlate with the hotter periods of last year.
Have you seen any practical tips for managing heat stress on farm which you could recommend to other dairy farmers?
Absolutely. So Kate can talk about what they implemented last summer, but we took a bunch of farmers to, both Italy and Spain over the last few years, and they obviously deal with hotter temperatures than us. And so we could take away ideas from them, what they're doing in hotter weather. But I'll let Kate say what they implemented on the farm last year.
So last year, we try and sort of make a few improvements to it every year, but you can't sort of do everything in one hit. But the biggest thing that we've done is actually to start bringing cows in about an hour before milking and actually standing them under a cold water irrigator. So the whole herd come into the collecting yard and they have a cold mist coming down over them, and that goes on for 1 minute and then off for 7 minutes to try and stop that buildup of humidity. The downside of that obviously is that they're then stood in a lot of water waiting to be milked, which I wonder if we then create another problem with a little bit of mastitis starting to creep in. You know, they're in a hot sort of environment and then you go and fill it with water and they poo everywhere in the way that cows do. So there is a little bit of a concern with that. We also quite often alter our milking time. So we'll milk very early in the morning to make sure that they're walking back out to grazing and they've got a few hours in the morning. So, you know, quite often they'll be back out to grazing. The very last ones will be back out before 6 o'clock in the morning. It does then mean that afternoon milking, you can't seem to avoid that hot temperature in the afternoon. Like, we could still be milking now and it wouldn't necessarily be that much cooler, but we were discussing at the last discussion group whether we actually put in a kind of 10-in-7 regime or something like that. So actually there's a few days of the week that they may well not have to come back in for milking at all. But we have found that actually moving cows on as well. So almost if you let them congregate and they go into those heat stress bundles around kind of under a tree or all together, that they never ever seem to come out of it. Whereas if you can offer them another grazing break or move them onto another paddock or something, it does seem to take their minds off of it just for a little while. Standing them in shade is another one. Last year, well, for the last 2 years actually, we've got to the point where we've actually housed in the summer, which, like I say, a few years ago, if I'd have come home and said that we were housing the cows in the summer as a spring block, would have seemed absolutely, you know, mad. But the last few years, it's definitely been the only option. And we've just started looking at potentially even putting in big fans to actually install in all the sheds, purely for the few months of the year that we are experiencing higher temperatures. So moving cows on, changing milking times, cold water irrigators definitely seem to be the main ones that we're using at the moment. And just making sure there's water like everywhere. So when they do move on, they're going to be walking back past water troughs to get back. So it's not like they've been in a heat stress bundle and then they've got to potentially get all the way back to the farm. Because, you know, us, like most spring calvers, they can have a bit of a walk to grazing. I don't think we'll be alone with that. But actually, they've now got troughs on the journey, and we've installed a lot more troughs around the yard as well. So if they are coming in to stand under the irrigators, the water's cooled them down and there's immediately the option of food and drink in there to make sure that we're not getting any falling into sort of metabolic deficit just as we're getting into those really important weeks with AI and trying to get the majority of the herd in calf. So another thing we've actually done this year as well is we've always done a lot of pre-mowing, so kind of third round tidy up, which I think a lot of spring calvers do as well, or mowing ahead of the cows. And what we've done this year is actually making sure that we're only ever offering them stuff that's been pre-mown at night. So they'll go out and actually their night break will be pre-mown and their day break never will be, to make sure that you're not adding that level of kind of dry matter forage into the diet in those hottest hours of the day.
Thanks, Kate. There are some really good practical tips there that can be pretty easily adapted to suit a lot of systems. Claire, are there any simple housing adaptations that you've seen on clients' farms or perhaps on your trips abroad?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Kate already alluded to, is just better access to water and make sure that water troughs are filling quick enough. Cows won't walk more than 250 metres to a water trough, so you need to make sure that there is one available in that time. Simple things such as if there's skylights on the roof of the shed, painting them black to create shade within the shed can really help. And then just improving ventilation of the shed. And this can be as simple as cutting vegetation around the edges and so that there's more air drawn into the sides of the shed to create that stack effect. And then, as Kate said, more and more of our clients are putting in fans. For a heat stress point of view, these fans do need to be blowing onto the cows over the beds, and then the ventilation still needs to be good enough within the shed. But it's always something for an expert to come and have a look at and advise what the best thing is. Other things simply to do when housing them is just decrease your stocking density within that shed and change your feed time. So as Kate said, obviously the rumen is a big fermentation fat. If you fill her up with food, she's going to be ruminating most for the next 4 to 6 hours, and that produces a lot of heat. So if you can give them the majority of their dry matter intake over the night when they're cooler, then you're going to abate the signs of heat stress a lot more. And yeah, you can look at increasing the energy density of the ration as well to reduce the forage intake, which causes more fermentation, but without trying to reduce the energy of the ration. But obviously, you've got to watch out for acidosis with that, especially if they are heat stressed, then that could be another invisible sign.
Thank you. Kate, could you sum up? So if you were to speak to a farmer today who has just decided they need to address the situation that they have on their farm, what would your key messages to them be?
To not be surprised how early you have to go in with, like, how, a bit like Claire was saying, actually, cows get hotter before we necessarily think that it's hot. So actually don't be surprised, like, turn the fan on a bit early, turn the water on a little bit early, and just don't worry about being sort of flexible. I sort of think we have to sort of wonder how we'd feel if we were put in the sort of situations where we're putting in. So it's very easy to get quite sort of stressed out yourself when they're in these bundles and things like that. But you actually have to kind of, I suppose, learn to be that bit more adaptable and just be sort of aware, like, you know, actually, do we need to go and offer them another break? If they're not that happy, you know, don't be afraid to move them on, put in the extra water tray. I don't think it's like one big fix, which is what we're finding. We just find every year there's something else that we can possibly do a little bit better. So a big one for us is also as well, just trying not to, well, obviously looking at the cows, but also looking at the people who are managing the cows themselves. Because if everybody's hot and everyone's stressed, then there's quite a big sort of conversation. So we're trying to meet as a team here as well and just make sure that sort of everyone's coping with it, that everybody knows what to do. And actually, if someone is finding milking especially stressful, or they're just getting very fed up with it, because obviously cow flow is affected, milking is harder, being organic flies are a big thing as well. So you've got to sort of look after your cows and also look after the team of people that are helping you with those cows. So I suppose those would be my main things, like just full scale sort of adaptability, and don't expect to fix it with one quick thing. Like, every year is going to be different. Adapt to what you think the cows are needing every day. So if there is suddenly a cooler day, offer them a whole stack more feed. Or even if you've got grass out, if they're not eating it, don't worry about feeding them in the shed. If they're hot, get them in early, turn on the irrigator. Just every little thing, I think, can make a big difference. And we're just definitely finding the more of those little things we can do to try and get through it, the less of those massively clinical signs we're seeing each year, I suppose.
Thanks, Kate. And Claire, what would your take-home messages be?
Very similar. I think to face up that this is a problem and it's something that we do need to address as an industry and on our units. It's not something we can ignore, and your cows are going to do better for you if you don't ignore it. As Kate says, there's lots of little fixes that can help. And although cows do like their routine, they have been shown to be fairly adaptable as well to changing situations to make everything better for them.
Well, thank you both for speaking to us today. While heat stress is a big concern for many of us, it's clear there are plenty of ways farmers can prepare for and cope with increasing temperatures. There's lots of guidance on AHDB's website about managing cows and cows during hot weather. And of course, your local knowledge exchange manager is always your first point of contact if you want advice or pointing in the right direction. I'm Tom Washbourne. Thank you very much for listening.
If you have any comments about this podcast, or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.